Welcome to the ESMO 2020 Highlights podcast on the evolving landscape of immunotherapy combinations in the first-line treatment of metastatic renal cell carcinoma, powered by Young Oncologists to Young Oncologists. My name is Marie Akfouri, and today I will have my ESMO Young Oncologist Committee Fellow and Uro-Oncology Specialist, Christoph Oing, to talk about the ESMO 2020 Congress highlights in renal cell carcinoma and recent developments in the field. So very interesting data in renal cell carcinoma were presented at the ESMO 2020 Congress, especially with the late-breaking results of the CheckMate 9ER trial. So Christoph, could you walk us through the study and give us your intake on the results?
I sure will. Thank you very much, Maria, for this kind introduction. Thanks for having me. And yeah, that was really one of the highlights presented at this year's ESMO 2020 with a really guideline-relevant practice-changing impact. And it was a new study in the setting of metastatic clear cell renal cell carcinoma, which was presented by Tony Turi from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute as a late-breaking abstract during the first presidential session. It was the randomized phase 3 study called CheckMate 9ER, which was assessing the efficacy and safety of the combination of the anti-PD-1 antibody nivolumab and the VEGFR-MET and AXL-targeting TKI cabozantinib versus the long-standing first-line standard VEGFR-targeting TKI sunitinib for the first-line treatment of advanced renal cell carcinoma. Both nivolumab and cabozantinib have been shown to improve overall survival as single agents in the metastatic clear cell renal carcinoma setting. Nivolumab promotes anti-tumor responses by preventing cancer cells from evading immune detection, and cabozantinib has been ascribed anti-angiogenic and immunomodulatory properties that may counteract tumor-induced immunosuppression. In this study, nivolumab was administered at a dose of 240 mg every 2 weeks, and cabozantinib at the lower dose of 40 mg once daily compared to single-agent phase 3 study Meteor, while sunitinib was applied at the standard dose of 50 mg once daily on the 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off schedule as a control arm. In total, 651 patients with metastatic clear cell renal cell carcinoma and IMDC risk any group were included and randomized in a one-to-one fashion. Primary endpoint was PFS. In all randomized patients, secondary endpoints comprised of overall survival, objective response rate, and safety, as well as health-related quality of life as an exploratory endpoint. After a median follow-up of 18.1 months, there was a doubled median PFS of 16.6 versus 8.3 months reported for the combination arm with an extraordinary hazard ratio of 0.51, meaning a 49% reduction in the risk of disease progression or death. This superiority was interestingly consistently seen across all subgroups, including the different IMDC risk statuses, tumor PD-L1 expression, and the presence of bone metastasis. The overall survival data are still premature, with a median not reached in either arm. But even in this first interim analysis, there was an already detectable overall survival benefit of 40% for the combination of nivolumab and cabozantinib, which was also consistent across all subgroups alongside an impressively improved objective response rate of 55.7% for the interventional arm, which was roughly 29% higher than with sunitinib. Complete remissions were seen in 8% of cases in the interventional and just 4.6% of cases in the control arm, and responses were induced much quicker and lasted significantly longer with nivolumab and cabozantinib. The tolerability was also better for the interventional arm with less frequent treatment discontinuation, while any grade treatment-related adverse events were seen more often during combined treatment. In fact, only 3.1% of patients discontinued both nivolumab and cabozantinib due to adverse events. Dose reduction for nivolumab were not allowed, while about 50% of patients in both arms had a dose reduction for either cabozantinib or sunitinib. Most frequent treatment-related AEs were evenly distributed between both arms and likely ascribable to the TKI, which were diarrhea, hand-foot syndrome, and hypertension, where liver enzyme elevations were more frequent in the combination arm likely related to the immunotherapy. Most IO-related adverse events were generally mild, and only 9% of patients required higher-dose corticosteroid treatment. Lastly, with regard to the quality of life, the combination did not impact health-related quality of life on a renal cell carcinoma-specific score, whereas sunitinib induced an ongoing deterioration of quality of life outcomes from baseline measured with the FKSI-19 questionnaire, emphasizing the patient's perspective. Moreover, disease-related symptoms assessed by the FKSI-DRS scale consistently improved from baseline in the interventional arm, while they deteriorated with sunitinib treatment. So taken together, with the already guideline-endorsed combinations of nivo and ipilimumab and pembrolizumab plus axitinib, the combination of nivo and cabozantinib will inevitably be adopted by all clinical practice guidelines soon, as all these combinations have been shown to clearly exceed the efficacy of the former first-line standard sunitinib for metastatic clear cell renal cell carcinoma.
Thank you, Christoph, for the highlight. So would you say the results of the CheckMate 9ER study are really a game changer, or just another study showing superiority of immunotherapy and TKI over the former standard sunitinib for all clear cell renal cell carcinoma patients, whatever IMDC risk group they are?
Well, first of all, the IO-based combinations are definitely the new standard of care for the first-line treatment of metastatic clear cell renal cancer, as they have shown to be superior, all of them, to sunitinib, which was the former gold standard. In line with this, the CheckMate 9ER study has met all of its three efficacy endpoints, and the combination of nivo and cabo can be considered another new first-line standard for metastatic clear cell RCC patients. The clear improvement of both PFS and OS, together with the impressive disease control and objective response rate, with responses achieved quite quickly, really justify this combination to become an equal first-line option in the upcoming guideline updates. Another highlight of this study compared to the other studies on axitinib and IO combinations is the even lower rate of primary progressive disease and an extraordinary disease control rate due to superior activity of the TKI backbone cabozantinib. Together with nivolumab and ipilimumab from the CheckMate 214 trial and pembrolizumab and axitinib from the KEYNOTE 426 trial, we will now soon have three different guideline-endorsed combination treatment options, either immunotherapy plus immunotherapy or immunotherapy plus TKI to choose from for IMDC intermediate and poor prognosis patients, and either of the IO-TKI combinations for the IMDC good risk patients, leaving sunitinib clearly behind. The two other treatment combinations which have been drawn attention to, atezolizumab plus bevacizumab and avelumab plus axitinib, did also show reasonable activity during recent years, as both randomized trials reached their primary efficacy endpoints, improving PFS over sunitinib. But these are not guideline endorsed, as they fail to also show a consistent OS improvement. This remains despite an EMA approval for avelumab plus axitinib.
So with all these new combinations, what do you recommend for treatment decision-making?
Well, that's really a good point. So it's more or less up to us, because the choice for IMDC intermediate and poor risk patients is more or less open. All guideline endorsed treatment regimens, nivo ipi, pembro axi, and soon also nivo carbo, display superiority over sunitinib. Notably, IMDC good risk patients will more likely benefit from an immunotherapy TKI combination, as nivo and ipi were not superior to sunitinib in this subgroup of patients in the CheckMate 214 study. But generally, it's not right to do direct cross-trial comparisons, and thus it is a bit difficult to say. One should avoid these cross-trial comparisons due to the following differences: in the agents assessed, the study design and endpoints, the defined populations for primary efficacy analysis, the IMDC risk group distribution across studies, median follow-up, the tools used to assess the quality of life, and consequently, just from these aspects mentioned earlier, the study results. Unfortunately, The three options for the first-line treatment will most likely never be compared by randomized comparisons, leaving the decision on whether to choose an IO-IO combination or a combination of an immune checkpoint inhibitor with a TKI to the discretion of the individual primary caretaker after thorough discussion of risks and benefits with the patient. Generally, I would say disease and symptom burden, toxicity profiles, patient comorbidities and preferences, the availability of the drugs and personal experience with either regimen will be very important in the decision-making process. As such, for example, achieving an early response is more likely to happen with an IO-TKI combination rather than with nivo-ipi when compared to sunitinib, whereas the highest proportion of complete remission of 11% has so far been reported in the CheckMate 214 trial for nivo-ipi. The rate of primary progression instead was highest with the IO-IO combination of nivo-ipi and lowest with nivo-carbo instead. Regarding toxicity, it is noteworthy that toxicity of the IO-IO combination of nivo-ipi seems to be higher during the induction phase with both drugs mostly related to the ipilimumab, whereas the continuously given immunotherapy TKI combinations seem to be associated with continuing higher grade adverse events due to the continuous TKI exposure, which may require dose reductions at least of the TKI under the course of treatment. And with respect to quality of life and bearing in mind the precautions of cross-study comparisons, generally, nivolumab plus ipilimumab more likely improve quality of life from baseline. Nivolumab plus cabozantinib maintain the baseline quality of life and performs better than sunitinib, while the combination of pembrolizumab and axitinib did not seem to be any different from sunitinib. However, the general expectations towards a convincing activity of combining immunotherapy and a TKI have been met by both pembro and axi, as well as nivo and cabozantinib. At the same time, precautions against the possibly enhanced toxicity profile due to the cabozantinib has not been seen in the CheckMate 9ER trial, and I personally find cabozantinib is a very promising backbone as it is not only targeting the VEGF family receptors, but also, for instance, c-MET and AXL as resistance-promoting escape mechanisms. By the way, there was another interesting study presented at ESMO 2020, the phase 2 COSMIC-0201. This trial also assesses cabozantinib as a backbone in combination with the PD-L1 antibody atezolizumab, and it nicely confirms the findings reported by the CheckMate 9ER study with regards to efficacy, where we also see a very high disease control rate after a short follow-up period for now, with also convincing safety and tolerability profiles. Importantly, the COSMIC-021 trial holds promise to further help provide helpful data in the future, because here patients were treated with cabozantinib at two different doses, either the lower 40 milligrams or 60 milligrams once daily, which will hopefully tell us more on what dose is really needed and if toxicity can be reduced safely. Moreover, a complete remission rate of 18% in PD-L1 positive, CD8 positive patients as a potential new biomarker subset of tumors is really impressive and has never been seen before. So one might, of course, question the need for this additional combination of atezolizumab and cabozantinib, but we await results of a phase 3 study called CONTACT 3, which will assess this promising and well-tolerable combination in the second-line setting soon.
Thank you, Christoph, for your insightful comments. So what urgent questions remain unanswered so far, and what do you await for 2021?
Well, the field of renal cell carcinoma treatment is really evolving rapidly, both in the metastatic setting and the perioperative setting. There's so much going on, so we can really be excited what will happen over the next couple of years. And of course, there are several aspects which remain to be elucidated while facing this evolving treatment landscape, especially in metastatic renal cancer. First of all, I think it will be interesting to see the CheckMate 9ER results with a longer follow-up to know whether or not the high rate of responses is also enduring over time, which I believe, in fact, will be the case. Adding to that, it would, of course, be nice to know whether or not the new immunotherapy TKI combinations are also effective in the rare non-clear cell renal carcinoma subtypes, which were usually not included in the large phase 3 trials. For instance, type 1 papillary tumors are more frequently associated with MET mutations, which is also a target of cabozantinib or crizotinib, and chromophobic renal cell carcinomas seem to rather benefit from mTOR inhibitors. The rare collecting duct or Bellini duct carcinomas are understood to be an immunogenic tumor type with an average of 20% tumor infiltrating lymphocytes, which seem to be more behaving like urothelial cancers and to respond to platinum-based chemotherapy. Another aspect which would be nice to know more about would be more recent evidence which was pointing on IO treatment to be effective in non-clear cell renal cell carcinoma histologies, while for now, in the guidelines such as the ESMO guideline, the TKI sunitinib and pazopanib or the mTOR inhibitor everolimus remain the standard of care, and there's an urgent need to find new biomarkers and treatment options in these patient subgroups. For patients with sarcomatoid features, instead, nivolumab and ipilimumab have recently been endorsed as a new first-line standard based on promising activity and a very high rate of complete remissions in a subgroup analysis of the phase 3 study. Another important question for me to answer is how to best treat patients with clear cell renal cell carcinoma and brain metastases, a really poor prognosis subset, where the optimal regimen or even the multimodal approach has not been defined so far, as these patients are not represented within the previously discussed studies. Lastly, with all the new treatment paradigms and guideline recommendations, the most striking issue to solve will be answering the question for the optimal treatment sequence, depending on whatever first line you choose for an individual clear cell renal cell carcinoma patient, the by far largest renal cell cancer population. Clearly, the first line treatment you choose will impact your further treatment options and choices. If you start with an IO-IO combination in the first line, that will guide you definitely to use an anti-angiogenic TKI in the second line. The situation instead is, of course, less clear if you have used an immunotherapy TKI combination in the first line and where you have already used two effective classes of agents in the first line then. So in summary, I'm really confident that future renal cancer research will identify reliable and easily accessible biomarkers, for instance, such as the easy-to-assess immunohistochemical staining as reported for the COSMIC-021 study for PD-L1 and CD8, to guide treatment decision-making in both clear cell renal cell cancer and hopefully also in the non-clear cell cancers, and to help us optimize treatment sequencing. And I'm really excited to see what comes up in 2021.
Thank you very much, Christoph Oing, for taking the time to record this new series of podcasts by the ESMO Young Oncologist Committee. To our listeners, if you want to learn more about it and hear the other topics selected, go to the Yuck Corner or Oncology Pro on the ESMO webpage to find the full recordings of the scientific and educational ESMO weekend. Thank you.